Wisconsin. Tell me how you feel, right? And please tell me something good. Unfortunately,
or fortunately, depending on your persuasion, that
might not be happening this half hour. I've got a couple of really special guests lined up, but very briefly, had to, of course, share with you, baseball nerd that I am. Brewers put up a pretty fun win yesterday, 7-5. They're playing the Miami Marlins again tonight. They're on the road, so that game is going to be kicking off at 5:40. Don't worry, though. If you are in Richland Center, you can catch the game on WRCE 107.7 FM or 1450 AM. We've got you covered if you're in Racine or Kenosha. Racine 99.9 FM, 1400 AM. Kenosha 98.1 FM on RJN. WISS Oshkosh Air Support also going to get the Brewers at 98.3 FM and 1100 AM. And finally, of course, what's up, Park Falls, on 98Q Country, WCQM. You will be hearing the Brewers as well, starting at 5:40. You don't want to miss that. Mark from Prairie du Sac, my dear, dear friend. You have been so very patient, Mark. I'll let you get the last word before we move on to our very special guests.
Not a problem. And I just, you know, Judge Alito should be reminded that even in antiquity, you know, judicial corruption was looked upon very negatively. I think it was the Persians that actually executed corrupt judges by flaying them alive and using their skin to cover the judicial bench. And I'm not suggesting we do that. But, I mean, these guys took a sacred oath to our Constitution to uphold the law and to do it without blemish. I mean, that this is bad behavior.
Yeah, there's no question about that. Well, I'm looking that up. Persians filleting judges and using the skin for the bench when they were corrupt.
Hey, you know, there's all sorts of stuff. Go look at how many people Genghis Khan is related to.
Yeah, I would call that a deterrent, would you not?
I would say so. I've seen, I've heard of being roasted in front of people. I know a couple of czars had a little issue with that. Mm-hmm. Justice was a little bit back. But the problem is there's no, like, let's say you got it wrong.
There's no, like, give backs. There's no redo on that.
Yeah. Turns out there's no, like, oh, DNA evidence exonerate them.
Whoops-a-daisy. Just ask Donald Trump in the Central Park Five. Just point of historical fact, in 1969, Justice Abe Fortas resigned from a seat on the Supreme Court for taking a $20,000 consulting fee, which he returned from a foundation led by a man who was convicted of securities fraud. As the Times editorial board wrote then, a judge not only has to be innocent of any wrongdoing, but he also has to be above reproach. Justice Alito, I'm looking at you, brother. I wouldn't call what you've engaged in above reproach, and that's the whole point. But I have digressed. Let's bring in our very special guest. I'm joined by Journal Sentinel reporter Genevieve Redston, who's been doing absolutely encyclopedic, comprehensive, detailed reporting on the housing authority of the city of Milwaukee, that seems to be in all kinds of disarray by any measure. Welcome, Genevieve. Thanks so much for making time.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm really excited to have you to help us understand. First off, let's just start with, what is the housing authority?
This is a good question. It takes me 3 or 4 paragraphs to explain this in every story I write. The Housing Authority is a little complicated. It's an agency that's primarily funded by the federal government, and its board is set by the mayor and confirmed by the Milwaukee Common Council, but it's kind of its own thing. It's not a city agency, and it has a lot of freedom to operate affordable housing in Milwaukee as it sees fit. So, the Housing Authority is a major landlord. It operates about 5,200 rental units across the city. It also administers the city's Section 8 voucher program. So it administers about $40 million a year in federal rent subsidies. And in addition to that, more recently, it's been branching out into real estate development. So it's redeveloping a big neighborhood out on the northwest side called West Lawn Gardens. That's a project that's cost upward of $200 million. It also helped with the construction of the Hmong Peace Academy, So, you know, to try to make a long story short, the Housing Authority is the most essential source of affordable housing in the city of Milwaukee, and it's also a major landlord. So the city is often trying to figure out how to make sure that the Housing Authority is serving the 10,000 Milwaukee residents who rely on it for shelter in the best way possible.
Who decided that the Housing Authority should now be in the development business? I mean, it seems really weird that, like, they have this affiliated entity. The executive director of the Housing Authority is also the director of this development arm. Are they going to sell it? Are they trying to turn a profit? Are they just trying to create more affordable? Where did this all come from?
So the issue is, a lot of the properties that the Housing Authority operates, the public housing properties around the city, are getting pretty old. A lot of them are high-rise buildings from the 60s or 70s, and they have really expensive maintenance costs. And over the years, federal funding for public housing has, you know, kind of dried up. And so all of these housing authorities across the country are left with really big and important but expensive buildings, and they're trying to figure out how to salvage them and keep them in decent shape for the people who live inside of them. And so what they're doing is kind of branching out into development and partnering with private investors in the community. And so PNC Bank has been a big partner of the Housing Authority in its redevelopment of Westlawn. But it's supposed to be sort of an infusion of private capital into affordable housing, which is in desperate need of more money.
So they're partnering with private entities effectively with these new housing projects, which allow them to sell off the tax credits that these housing projects can generate, which can be then sold into the private sector. You know, for-profit entities like to partner because they can, in effect, buy the tax credits and reduce their overall tax liability. The reason that I've gotten into that wonky detail is, of course, to everyone across the state, I guarantee you there is, not guarantee, I would say it is highly likely that some sort of public-private partnership along these lines is happening in virtually every county in the state. This has become an increasingly used model to respond to needs within our communities, regardless of where you are in the state, when there's simply not enough public dollars to get the job done on its own. What's about the annual budget of the Housing Authority for the city of Milwaukee?
The annual budget, it's a little bit complicated because there are, you know, are a few different sides of the Housing Authority. There's, you know, its affordable housing developments, there's its sort of, you know, redeveloped properties, and then there's Section 8. But the about $44 million a year that goes toward the Section 8 program is probably the most controversial right now, because about a little over a year ago, federal inspectors went inside of the Housing Authority's Section 8 office to make sure that it was complying with regulations. And they found boxes of unsorted paperwork lining the stairwells and the hallways, some stacked 5 feet high. And they found that the records that the Housing Authority was maintaining in this office, which administers a lot of public funding every year that people really need to, you know, afford housing in Milwaukee, was not reliable. And so right now the Housing Authority is under strict orders to make sure it's using that $40 million a year in funding and $4 million a year in administrative expenses properly.
It's very concerning to me because based on your reporting, I understand that the federal government, effectively HUD inspectors and auditors, raised a flag way back in 2015 that the agency was not keeping its books properly, that there was a high, that the way that they were maintaining their financial records made it very possible that fraud, waste, and abuse was happening. We've also been hearing from residents over the past year, as your reporting has shown, that residents are complaining about bed bugs, rats, other insect infestation, that their heating and air conditioning is not adequate, that there's major security issues in some of the developments. So you aren't getting the books quite right. You've got you know, $100 million developments occurring. You got $44 million coming through your coffers in rental supports via the Section 8 program. You don't have your record keeping right, and your buildings have bugs and rodents and aren't safe. What is Hackam doing about all this?
Well, on the Section 8 front, it is on two federal corrective action plans to correct course. So it's bringing in an outside contractor to run its Section 8 office and also to reconstruct 5 years of financial records, do a forensic audit to make sure that the money was spent properly. So that's what's happening on the Section 8 side of things. But public housing is still, you know, there's still a lot of complaints that you mentioned raised by tenants. Tenants have been organized by Common Ground, which is a coalition of nonprofits and churches and faith groups and businesses around Milwaukee. And they have been pushing the housing authority to do more to keep its buildings in good condition and also safe. So they've hired some additional security since Common Ground began lobbying for that. And the biggest news recently is that the city is going to start sending building inspectors to investigate tenant complaints about building conditions, which you might have expected the city would have been doing otherwise. Hackam is one of its biggest landlords, but only recently is the city starting to kind of dig into things too.
My guest this half hour is Genevieve Redston, a reporter with the Journal Sentinel. We're talking about affordable housing in the city of Milwaukee and one of the agencies that helps folks access affordable housing and all of the problems going on with the Housing Authority of the City of Milwaukee. Trust me, there's probably some situation very analogous going on in your community as well. We're going to be back with Genevieve in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. We'll dig in further.
Don't you have homes?
I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, joined this half hour by Journal Sentinel reporter Genevieve Redston, who's been taking a deep dive and a look at the troubles that have been plaguing the Housing Authority of the City of Milwaukee. It's a entity that sits outside of the city governmental structure. It's funded largely by the federal government. They administer Section 8 vouchers, which help folks pay rents, which have been rising precipitously, especially since COVID. They engage in real estate development to increase the volume, the supply of affordable housing in the city. And they also operate as a landlord. They themselves have existing housing units that folks in the city rent from. They have been criticized over the past year, according to Ms. Redston's reporting, for having, frankly, rodents, infestation, unsafe buildings, as well as, people that work for Hackam bullying residents, losing residents' paperwork, not properly processing resident rental payments. And at least since 2015, the federal government has been sounding the alarm about the City of Milwaukee's Housing Authority, saying their financial paperwork, their financial processing, their financial controls are just a complete mess. Ms. Redston's reported and shared with us this afternoon that the federal government has directed that the Housing Authority bring in an outside entity to help run their Section 8 program and that they engage in a forensic audit to clean up their paperwork. Kind of leaves me asking the question, well, if you're peeling off Section 8 and if, you know, the city could engage in public-private partnerships on its own to build more affordable housing and they're failing as a landlord, what the heck? What's Hackam still doing? It seems very strange to me. Who's accountable here? Who is ultimately responsible?
That's a really good question. It's something that tenants and community organizers have been asking of the mayor, because it's up to the mayor to nominate people to the board of commissioners. Right now, there are 7 people on the board that oversee the housing authority, and 3 of those seats are vacant. And so tenants and organizers want the mayor to step up and put people on the board who are going to ask pretty tough questions of the executive team there. So far, though, the mayor has not named any potential replacements for those empty seats. And tenants and organizers are beginning to float their own ideas for people who might be able to push back against the leadership there and ask them, you know, who's let things get this bad, especially in the Section 8 office.
Now, in the interest of full transparency, my dad is a guy by the name of Mike Dawn, Michael Dawn. He worked in the comptroller's office for the city of Milwaukee for a long time, and he actually helped Common Ground do some of the financial analysis to determine how much cash on hand Hackham had to basically address the maintenance and repair concerns of residents. So I just want to be fully transparent with people. This is something that I've heard a bit about. But aside from the work that my dad did from sort of a bean counter standpoint to help Common Ground understand, just as a citizen and looking at this, other reports have turnover at Hackham at about 80 to 90% going back from 2021 to 2022. So we've got openings on the board. Who is it? The mayor who's ultimately responsible? Is it HUD, the federal agency? Is it both? You've said that the Department of Neighborhood Services of the city of Milwaukee is now inspecting the buildings that Hackham runs as a landlord. These problems go back, I mean, 2015, it's been 9 years. Like, is there someone at the head of this organization, including the mayor? Like, how has this been, what has been Hackham's response? Is it sort of a mea culpa, we'll do these things, we're going to get it right?
So Hackham's response has been, you know, HUD has put us on a corrective action plan and we're working through it and we're doing our best. At the head of Hackham is a guy, Willie Hines. He's the Housing Authority's executive director. He was formerly the president of the Common Council. So he's a longtime political figure in the city of Milwaukee. And some tenants and organizers have called on him to resign. They said, you know, you're at the helm of this organization. It's in a lot of trouble. Clearly, you're not doing your job. But the mayor has stood behind Willie Hines and said they think he's getting things on the right track. So it's a little tough to say, especially because often there's some confusion about who's supposed to be watching the Housing Authority. Is it the federal government? Is it the city? It's not always clear.
How much does Mr. Hines make a year? Do you know? Is it public?
Yeah, $240,000 a year.
Wow. Okay.
That's more than the mayor.
It's a lot more than the mayor, but I think by a clip of nearly like $50,000 to $60,000. I talk often, Genevieve, on the show about citizens and residents being able to demand the best from those that are supposed to be working in the public interest. And one of the things that frustrates me, and I have met Willie over the years. He is a good man. I believe he's trying to do the right thing. But on occasion, there come some times where if you've worked in government and you look and it hasn't worked well, and the folks that are responsible for these services or these departments or these programs have been around and they've been on notice about the problems and the problems haven't been fixed. This is one of the reasons that I think regular people get really frustrated with government. You know, here you're making $250,000 a year minus 10 grand. And we still have these problems and you're telling us, just trust us, it'll get better. What are you hearing from Common Ground these days? What should people be looking for next on this issue?
You know, I think Common Ground is really putting pressure on anybody who has the power to do something about this to step in. You know, and because there are a lot of people who have some responsibility for overseeing Hackham, there's also a lot of people who could make a difference. So that's the mayor, who has the power to appoint board members, Representative Gwen Moore, who helps, you know, get Milwaukee its funding for affordable housing, you know, Senators senators, the even President Joe Biden, really anybody in the federal government.
I was just going to ask you, you reported last week that someone from the acting secretary of HUD, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, was in the state. What has the Biden administration's response been to these concerns raised about Hackam?
Yeah, so this was some interesting news last week when the acting HUD secretary was in town with Vice President Kamala Harris. She said she's taken a look at the situation in Milwaukee and she's concerned about it. She said that she hears residents and that they're going to take action. And she was not clear on whether she will continue to stand behind the leadership there. She said, you know, she hasn't had an update on that in a while, but that they'll, you know, they're taking a look at everything. So we'll have to see, I suppose, what that actually means in practice.
You can follow What Is Next with the Housing Authority of the City of Milwaukee at journalsentinel.com and by taking a look at the great reporting from my guest this past half hour, Genevieve Redston. Thanks so much, Genevieve.
Thank you.
Stay tuned. I have another incredibly gifted reporter from the Journal Sentinel coming up. Carrie Spivak's going to join me to talk about what has gone on with another organization in the City of Milwaukee, the Social Development Commission. Also part of my constant reflection of how do we hold people in charge of stuff accountable, gosh darn it. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. You got a question, comment, or thought you'd like to share, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. Your farm update is next. Listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. You want to give us a buzz? You got questions, comments? You're going to call my good friend Brian Kelly at 855-752-4842. Wondering what to do after the show? Of course, you got devil's advocates across the Civic Media Radio Network. But, you know, if you're up for maybe a little big band music, not to worry. WRJN out of Racine and Kenosha has you covered. You're also going to hear your good local media, local news from WRJN. Not occasion, we'll have little Packers, little Brewers on. So check out the new format at WRJN. But do not fear, because WAUK, where Brian and I broadcast live every day, has got you covered way down into the suburb south, the Chicagoland area.
Yeah, actually, I've heard this station, 540 AM, on the other side of the lake at Exit 1 in Michigan.
Get out.
That's what I did. I got out of the car because it was at the rest stop. But yes.
Yes.
I did. I heard it right at exit one.
Very cool. So across the lake, down to Chi-Town, WAUK's got you covered. Really excited to bring on my next guest, Journal Sentinel reporter. I've been reading him for years. Vaunted member of the Fourth Estate, keeping government and all kinds of folks accountable. Carrie Spivak, welcome to my show, Carrie. Thanks for making time.
How you doing, Maggie? My pleasure.
Tell everybody what the Social Development Commission is. Or was.
It's an agency right now it's suspended. It may or may not come back. It's an agency that's been around for a lot of years, I think, since the early 60s. Their function and their budget current year was supposed to be $30 million. Their function in life is basically to provide a whole slew of programs to assist people in poverty. They have like 20 or 30 programs. They'll do employment training, food programs, all sorts of things. They're located, they got like four or five offices in Milwaukee. Their main one is on about 17th and North Avenue.
And this is not a government. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm sorry. I was just going to say they've also had a history of controversies.
Yeah, we'll talk
prior to this year.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about that so that everybody's got sort of a level set here. SDC, as it's known, the Social Development Commission, that's not a governmental agency. This is a standalone nonprofit anti-poverty agency. Do I have that right?
That's correct. They do get taxpayer money, though.
Yep, a lot of it. In fact, the bulk of their budget, right, is coming from basically state or federal grants or other aids. Is that, do I have that part right?
That's correct. And it goes through city and county governments.
Yep. So tell us, and listen, just to set the stage for folks listening and for you, Carrie, as well, oftentimes having worked in government for a long time, being a public servant myself, one of the things that I want us all to think about and be really active as voters, as constituents, as residents, as taxpayers, is how do we hold these different, whether they're governmental actors or nonprofits that are receiving these kinds of monies, how do we hold people accountable? How do we know if they're working? Because I don't think, my view is that that's not a partisan thing. We all want agencies that receive our dollars to be accountable and effective. And so are we watching the ball? And the reality is with agencies, not unlike Hackam, had your colleague Genevieve Redston on last half hour, and SDC, if the folks receiving the help aren't people with a lot of money, access, or time on their hands, sometimes that accountability is a little lax. And we're seeing that a bit here with the SDC. Tell us, you mentioned controversy that really had been around and surrounding SDC that came to light before this year. Set that stage for us. What had been some of the issues that had come to light before this year about SDC?
It's generally been questions about whether they were performing their duties. And like this year, where did the money go? Here. I just found in one of the clips we wrote that about a decade ago, it lost its largest program, Head Start, and discontinued Wisconsin Works, which was W-2. It's just one of those agencies that they're not in the spotlight like the county board would be or city hall would be, though they do get a lot of money, a lot of taxpayer money, and a lot of the meetings are not covered regular basis. A few years ago, we had a very good reporter by the name of Georgia Papps. You probably knew her.
Mm-hmm.
She retired a few years ago. She covered SDC a lot. She was going to all the meetings. She knew all the officials. And when Georgia retired, it kind of fell off. And there's a lot of agencies, both in the state, city, and county governments, that are handling a lot of money, doing important things, but get very little coverage, positive or negative.
Yeah.
And SDC would be one of those. They'll get coverage when it's negative, when something goes wrong,
right,
like now.
And that's what ends up happening, right? So to take a small tangent, everybody put a pin in what's going on with SDC for a second, because Carrie, you're raising something that's absolutely essential that I talk about a lot. And that is, not only do we residents and citizens want to be informed and help hold these agencies that get our money and government actors accountable, but our key partner in that are journalists and reporters like yourself, Carrie. And with the decimation of local newsrooms over the last decade, our tools for accountability have become increasingly limited, because you all, yourself and your colleague, Ms. Redston, can't be in all places at all times covering all agencies. You just don't have the bandwidth. It also inevitably leads to what you just said, Carrie. And that is, when agencies and governmental actors and elected officials get things right, we don't get to hear that either, because we don't. So the only stuff that ends up getting our attention or that get the allocation of reporters' time is when the stuff goes wrong. Do you agree mostly with that? I'm not a reporter. I just give my opinions about stuff. You all do the really hard work.
No, in a lot of ways, that's true. That's definitely the image. There will be positive stories on occasion when, you know, when something happens and we hear about it and it's promoted. But no, for an agency like SDC, they're appointed by City Hall, county, and some other agencies. The unions have somebody on, et cetera. But you're going to the person and you're saying, okay, we want you to give up at least one night a month for the regular meeting, maybe a couple of more for committee meetings. We're going to send you a lot of stuff so you can, you know, that you have to read to be prepared.
Yep.
You're not going to get paid. And they do give them a decent dinner, though, at SDC. But and in return, when something goes wrong, you're going to be in the papers and on TV.
Yes. It's not really a recipe.
Not the most enticing job.
Exactly. Not the recipe for, as you said, enticing people to serve in these positions. Mm-hmm. Largely, to summarize it, thankless, with nothing but downside if things go wrong. Tell folks what's happened with SDC since the beginning of the year. They're effectively closed, are they not?
Yeah, they suspended operations at the end of April. What happened was the then CEO, George Hinton, came out with a memorandum saying they had misallocated funds. I don't believe that that memo said the amount of funds. The reporter I've been working with, Gina Castro, and I figured out it's definitely in the six figures, guessing around 100.5.
Okay.
And it gave very little other details, just that there's misallocated funds. That obviously sparked our attention and some other media too. And since then, they suspended all operations. They have a budget of about $30 million, and there's nothing happening. If you go past that office, it's locked up. The board is meeting on a monthly basis still, but they're just trying to figure out where do we go from here. I would say at this point, they may or may not come back. There's no way to really know for sure, but what we do know is there's a lot of programs that are very important, one of which was the weatherization, which is where the funds were misallocated. And I would think this is early summer, but this is getting to the time of the year when you want to do the weatherization.
Yeah,
probably by midsummer. You don't want to wait till October. And then there's a whole host of other programs that they have. Like I said, it's 20 to 30 programs that they were running. And everything was shut down pretty much without any notice.
Were they able to transition those programs to other agencies? Is it kind of a mixed bag? And also, I know that you and Ms. Castro done some reporting. There's a lot of vendors that have not been paid by SDC.
And we've talked to some of those vendors, and they're the smaller vendors.
Of course.
For the most part. These other guys were... If you owed $100,000, that could, you know, you might have to lay somebody off. It's very important that they get those funds. They can't just eat that. So it's hitting a lot of people and a lot of smaller type vendors. And of course, their clientele would by definition be poor folk.
Yeah. Yeah. What went wrong here? Do we know? What was the problem?
We don't know yet. George Hinton resigned pretty much as soon as the problems were publicized. The state is looking at it. There's an audit. I don't think we'll know for sure until the audit is completed. There's one person, I believe he was the CFO. He's also out. He appears to be who they're trying to make the fall guy. We have not seen, surprisingly, for this amount of money, as of yet, any evidence of sticky fingers. Hmm. As far as we know, it's just, I shouldn't say just, but as far as we know, it's money that should have been in column A being moved to column B. Now, I'm not going to rule out until you know for certain whether
sure.
there was anybody taking money or, you know, any friendships or things like that, but... that's in a nutshell what happened. It just came out of the blue when George Hinton wrote the memo saying there was this misallocation of funds, and they haven't even officially said how much was misallocated.
Mm.
We're figuring, like I said, 100 to 100.5.
And just to circle back, have they been able to transfer the services that were helping, you know, working folks and poor folks in Milwaukee keep their heads above water? Have those programs all been transferred to another agency?
Some have. I know Community Advocates picked up some. Whether everything's been transferred, I don't know. I would kind of tend to doubt it. That's another problem now. You have an agency that's in trouble, that's shut down. Trying to get answers is pretty tough.
Yeah, and they've they basically let go of all their employees, right?
Exactly. Yeah. They're closed down right now. And even getting an open records request answered is pretty tough because they say, well, we can't get in the office and the people that have that information are not on payroll right now. So it's a mess.
Yeah. Again, this is what makes us all burning mad. You know what I mean? It's like, come on, somebody's got to be accountable. My guest this segment, Journal Sentinel, longtime reporter Kerry Spivak, thanks for your time this afternoon, sir. You can find more Kerry and Gina Castro's reporting at jsonline.com. That's from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Thanks so much, Kerry.
Oh, thank you. It was my pleasure.
I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Some closing thoughts. And, you know, there might have been another weird Trumpian earworm yesterday that's ricocheting around the right-wing media. More nonsense. Nonsense to cover in closing thoughts after these brief messages here on the Civic Media Radio Network. He is Brian Kelly, your friend and mine. We are on the Civic Media Radio Network. Last segment of the game. You want to get your shots in. You got last parting thoughts, questions. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Had two special guests this past hour, Genevieve Redston of the Journal Sentinel and Kerry Spivak. Both have had a series of articles that have come out about two different agencies working in the city of Milwaukee to provide assistance, one housing, the other a whole gamut of programs that help working people and poor folks, you know, keep their heads above water. And both the agencies, the Housing Authority of the City of Milwaukee and the Social Development Commission, have been just riddled with all kinds of financial control problems. This is the stuff that makes me really, really angry as a former governmental employee, as a citizen, as a taxpayer. What is going on with leadership in organizations or even, you know, rank and file staff? If you've got sight lines on what I'm going to call financial mismanagement or people not stepping up to be accountable when problems are happening, when you're getting notices from the federal government that your agency is susceptible to fraud, waste, and abuse, and you don't work to solve the problem, you can't then wonder why people feel disenchanted about government. I spent, you know, I don't know, 12 plus years working in government, more if you count when I was a clerk for Reagan appointee Federal Appeals Court Judge Michael Caney after I graduated from law school of the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. There were times when I screwed up. There were times when the department I led at Milwaukee County, when we had setbacks or didn't get things quite right. When I came in, I found some things in our budgets that I was like, what the heck is this? And why is it there? And why is it not over here? And why are we spending that money? And each time I would find a problem, I would try my best to be accountable. If I screwed up, I'm sorry I got that wrong. Here's what I'm going to do to fix it. Why don't we see... I beg people as elected officials, as leaders, have the humility and frankly, the personal strength when you screw up to say, I'm sorry. Nobody bats 1,000. That's not we can't hit that standard. Everybody knows mistakes are going to happen, but when they do, instead of hiding it, instead of spinning it, instead of BSing around, own it and say, here's my plan to fix it. Because I think Wisconsinites, you, me, we're pretty forgiving when people put, yep, got that wrong. Here's how we're going to get it right. I don't care if you're a Democrat, a Republican, an independent. I don't care what party you come from. If you are about getting it right and being accountable, I can support that. Now, politics is about spin. Yeah, I get that. But when it comes down to the brass tack stuff that matters the most to each and every one of us, no matter where you live in this state, urban, rural, north, south, east, west, we all basically want the same things. Get paid a fair wage, maybe have a little vacation, maybe even be able to retire, that our kids and our families live in safe places. Like government and others don't waste our time and money. And when people do, we're right to be mad.
And I think people jump on this,
yeah,
and say and take it to the extra step of saying all government doesn't work. And that's when you get really bad movements like, I don't know, MAGA.
Right. And not all government actors are equal. That is not the case. Not equally good or equally bad. I want the people that are accountable, that'll say, here is my plan. Here is what I'm going to try to get done. Here is what I've gotten done. Here's what we can do better. In specifics, you know, specific things.
Yeah, it's nice to go and have people. I once had a teacher, an instructor, tell me that an expert, someone who's an expert on a given subject, is someone who has made every conceivable mistake.
Yes. Because then you know what not to do.
Exactly. And you know how to fix it or how to get better from there.
It's also, and this, as a general point, this is why rich dudes, mostly rich dudes, also JFK's running mate for vice president, rich people saying, oh, because I'm rich, I should be in government. No. Because operating governments, operating nonprofit entities, it ain't the same as a for-profit company. You probably don't know jack squat diddly about how to actually make government work, and don't act like you do.
Yeah, because government for profit doesn't help people very much.
No, we don't sell clean air widgets on the free market. That's not a thing.
There's a clean air widget? Hmm. All right, I'll be back.
Yep. How much will you pay for to have clean water? Like, this is what taxes are. I've digressed. Let's talk about the Trumpian earworm of the afternoon. So everyone has lost their mind. It started with a tweet by a righty-whitey by the name of Julie Kelly, who doesn't know squat about what she was talking about, pulled out something from the search warrant for Mar-a-Lago. Okay? And the search warrant said this: law enforcement officers of the Department of Justice may use deadly force when necessary. This is in every warrant ever issued, ever requested.
Yeah, I feel like that's I feel like that's a thing.
So every single one of them contain this language. Donald Trump retweets it. They wanted to shoot me. Marjorie Taylor Greene then put up this post. The Biden DOJ and the FBI were planning to assassinate President Trump, and they gave the green light. Does everybody get it yet?
What?
I'm not kidding you. The language that appears in every single one of these things. Every warrant. Of course, then, Philip Bump on Fox News talked about the assassination plot. I mean, did it? By the end of the day, the FBI had to issue a statement and be like, listen, people. This is standard protocol, as we do in all search warrants, which includes a standard policy statement about the use of deadly force. No one ordered additional steps to be taken, and there was no departure from the norm in this matter. So just to be clear, there was no plot to assassinate Donald Trump during the Mar-a-Lago search warrant. I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But remember, it's always better when we stand together. I'll see you on Friday, everybody.
Stand back and stand by.
I don't stand by anything. I just, you can take it the way you want.